I think we can get started now. Hey everyone, welcome back to this live stream. I am Ishan Sharma, your host, and with me today I have Mehul Mohan. Mehul is a fourth year BITS Goa student. He currently is pursuing computer science. He will soon be graduating, and he also has his own YouTube channel with over 100,000 subscribers, and he's been learning to code from the last 5, 7 years. So in this webinar, we'll just be learning from him how to get started with coding, how to get started with web development, and some mistakes that you might make while doing so. All right, so yeah, let's get started with Mehul. How are you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, Ishan. Thank you for having me here.
Awesome. It's a pleasure to have you. All right, so I have a few questions lined up, and I'll be going through those questions, and then we can take up questions from the comments over here. So I can see all of your comments. Just wait for a few minutes. I'll just be discussing a few questions that I think every one of you will be having. And then if you have a few more questions, then we can discuss those as well. All right. Number one question that I feel that a lot of people have is to how to learn coding. This is the most basic question that a lot of people ask. And just assume that the person that is asking this question is someone that has just given their JEE exam and is just going into college. Okay, so for him or her, this is something very new. So how should they get started with this whole journey?
So for me, it's like you first have to figure out why you want to learn coding before you actually start learning coding. There's a whole misconception going on in the society that everybody has to become a developer if you want to earn a lot of money, which is true as a side effect of being a developer. But for me, the reason I started coding because I wanted to customize the blogs I was working on. So what you have to figure out as a 12th graduate, as somebody who's still in high school, or if you're completing your education, figure out your reason why you want to code. And money is not a reason. Money is a byproduct of coding. If you have a good enough reason that you like to develop things like games or websites or stuff like that, once you have your why, then you can figure out how you can do that, how you can approach that particular field. For me, I started with web development because I was already working with websites. A lot of people start with mobile applications, game development, because they have a tendency of creating new games. They like creating games which they can think of. So most of the things, like how people, most of the people which are confused about getting into coding, I strongly believe they do not have a why with them, why they want to code. Figure out your why, and rest of the stuff would just fit in nicely.
What was your why when you were getting started with code back in
My
your
why?
day, like 5 years
Yeah.
ago?
So my why, just like I said, was I wanted to customize some of the widgets which I was using on my blogs. So back in 2013, when I was first introduced to blogging, a bunch of my friends were actually doing what is probably not so legal sort of thing, that we used to share cracked softwares on blogs, right? So you can just go ahead and download cracked softwares from torrent websites, and then we can re-upload them and share them in form of a blog. So that way we got a bunch of traffic, 10, 15, 20 widgets a day. And we just figured out that, hey, there's a way we can have a subscribe to us box on our websites, which enables us to email people who are interested about our articles. So I just one day I just was browsing for some good widgets for subscribe to us, and I wanted to customize the look of one widget. And I did not know how to do that because, it was all some messy code, some black box things which I had to just copy and paste into a layout tab inside Blogger, if anybody of you remembers that. And it was sort of a black box thing, and I wanted to know about that. I wanted to get into that thing. I wanted to customize layout, customize templates, just give it a personalized look and feel on how I believe my blog should look like. So that was my why, basically. So this was like the very first moment which I remember when I started to interact with code, that is HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Yeah, so since then, when I started working with these technologies, I figured out that this is super interesting. This gives me so much power to actually create something which I can control 100% from the scratch. So this sort of power, when you realize that code gives you, it is sort of addicting, right? So once you are into that particular state of mind, then you can control everything on the web at least. you just want to go more into that rabbit hole of just getting to know what else is there. So that was my why. Figure out your why you want to learn to code. Money is not a reason. If you are a creator, if you're somebody who likes to work with source code, like actually programming stuff, figure out the field which you want. A lot of people are interested in ML, AI. Think about these fields like data analysis, machine learning, web development, mobile application development. There's so much. Just figure out where your interest lies. That is the first thing.
Awesome. That's really interesting. Let's actually talk about what domain they should go into when they are starting to learn to code. So there are a couple of things, right? There is web development, there is Android development, and iOS as well. And then there's the path of Python and ML/AI, all right? What do you think, what should one get started with?
If you're just looking for getting a taste of coding, I would say starting off with web development would be the most easy thing, because other things like if you are going for mobile application development, if you are going for ML/AI, these things actually require you to look away from a lot of paths. For example, if you are jumping into ML/AI, if you want to do a practical development right away, you have to ignore the fact that there's a lot of theory involved into understanding what is going on. Similarly, for mobile application development, this bar is much low, but it is still there. There would be a lot of code which you do not understand, a lot of boilerplate code which you are not going to get right away. And if you can work with code bases like that, where you have to just look away for a while till you get back to all the concepts, this is fine. You can start with ML or AI, ML, AI or mobile application development. But with web development, the thing is you start with a very simple HTML document. You write hello world. That is it. That is all the source code which you have written, and that is present on the browser as well. Web dev also has its own share of paths where you have to look away for a while, but it is very practical to start off with. You know, you can actually create a lot of applications on your first day of learning, which is not so much possible with mobile applications. You have to put in a little bit of work, and definitely not possible with machine learning and data analysis sort of things, because they require an understanding of theory before you can actually do something good. So my take would be to just go ahead and start with web development if you are clueless. That is my only take. If you do have an idea where you want to go ahead, then definitely go ahead into that field which you like.
All right. And what should be the roadmap of someone that is starting with web development? Suppose someone is watching this and they were like, okay, fine. Mehul is saying we should get started with web development. What should I do in web development? What language should I learn? What all should I be doing?
So first of all, understand that web development in itself is a broad field, number one. Number two is that you can split web dev into more or less two components. That is the front-end web development and back-end web development. Front-end is basically how you see websites, right? So if you go to google.com or facebook.com, you're going to see that the elements are arranged in a particular order in that particular page. It's not all messed up. The logos are shiny. There are shadows, text shadows. There's a particular layout that certain items appear in a grid. When you click on a particular item, the image pops up on the screen. It does not take the whole page. So things like these, they go into what we'd call as front-end web development. There's back-end web development where you actually go ahead and write the logic of the application. Like if you're creating a chat application, you want to store the messages of the people in the database. How do we do that? We perform that logic calculation. Maybe, if you want to figure out who sent the most messages on your chat, you write that logic on the back-end servers. So front-end and back-end are two major parts of web development. Again, if you are absolutely new, if you have no prior experience with any technology, I would say front-end is the easiest, but a lot of people actually like back-end as well, because it involves a bunch of logic and just getting to know how you can practically use a lot of logic as programming. Front-end is more of a UI, UX sort of thing. A lot of logic goes in front-end as well, but both of them, to be honest, go hand in hand. So start with front-end web development, and you can come to back-end as you go with front-end.
All right. One question that someone was asking is that what's the difference between web development and web design? And I think he's asking about front-end development and web design. So what do you think? What would be the difference between those two?
So web designing, basically, these terms are loosely interchanged for a lot of times. But if you go by the book, what I believe, the last time I checked, is web designing basically means that you are somebody who can design web pages. That means you can come up with layouts. Now, that does not necessarily mean you have to take part in code. That means you can just create designs for a particular web page. Now, that could be in Photoshop, that could be in, let's say, Sketch, that could be in Figma, that could be pretty much any software which helps you to create designs for a particular web page. So if you are a UX designer, if you are a web designer, you come up with those nice layouts and everything.
Mm-hmm. Wireframing and prototypes you have to create in that.
Yes, you come up with all the prototypes and all the wireframes, and then you pass on this information to a web developer. A developer basically converts these designs into actual code, which can be shipped on production, and other people can actually visit that URL and browse that. So this is sort of like the going by the book difference between web designer and developer. But a lot of times you're going to see that web developers, especially if you are a solo developer, web developers also come up with designs of the part. So you sort of work as a designer and a developer a lot of times.
All right. Just now we started talking about web development. People are already comparing React, Angular, and Vue. what would you say about this? Someone is saying React versus Vue versus Angular. Someone is saying React is greater than Angular or Vue. What is your view on these?
Yeah. So my view would obviously be biased towards React because I have been working with React for a lot of time. But I would just like to say that all three of them work, right? So it's not that one of them is broken or one of them is extremely, bad or anything like that. All three of them have their pros and cons. It's just that people like to fight on unnecessary sort of debates, right? So it does not really matter if you can do a particular job with Vue or React or Angular, as long as you can do it, as long as you know the fundamentals of that particular framework or a language, it does not matter, right? So all three work. There's nothing you can do in React which you cannot do in Vue. There's nothing you can do in Angular which you cannot do in React. So yeah, for the most part, this fight is just about preference, right? So if I am fighting somebody on this topic, I would stand up with React. Why? Because I have the most experience in that. A developer who has worked for 4 years with Vue would stand up with Vue, similarly for Angular. So yeah, that's my take, that all three works, and probably focus more on learning one of these instead of defending one of these.
Which is the hardest one to learn?
Hardest one to learn, I would say. Hottest, okay. Hottest is definitely React. So many startups and companies use React these days. You might argue that Vue has the most GitHub stars on their repository, but React is something which I have seen, which is backed by Facebook and has always been on the go-to list for jobs, internships, things like that. So yeah, I mean, again, this is a little bit, dependent on your demographics and where you live and what sort of companies you have around you. But on an average, you're going to see React developers jobs more than Vue or Angular.
All right. Well, someone over here is asking, Saurabh is asking, resource from which we can learn web development. So why don't we talk about that? Resources, of course, we know there is, you have YouTube, you have other Udemy and Coursera, and you have your own platform. So please tell me about all of these and what are the pros and cons of each of these.
Okay, so let's start with YouTube, first of all. You know that I have a YouTube channel called CodeDamn, where I share a lot of stuff. So YouTube is fine. I started off YouTube back in 2015, but late in 2018, 2017, I felt the need that, we can do a little bit more than just videos, because I hope that a lot of people who are watching the stream have at least a little bit of experience with some programming language, or maybe they have at least just gone through a playlist and they would understand how boring it gets to watch a full playlist, right? A lot of times you're gonna just doze off, you get disconnected from the creator, even though if you're religiously following a playlist. What is missing in today's sort of programming education is hands-on practical development and learning, right? Because you cannot become a good coder by just watching videos, as much as, you know, somebody says you that, you know, buy this course, buy that course, and you will be a good developer. It is not possible unless you yourself do some sort of coding with your own hands, because that muscle memory would not build for coding unless you write things yourself, unless you come up with logic yourself. So this was my motivation. This is actually how I learned programming myself. I got into freelancing because of this. But the main motivation of creating CodeDAM platform was to have an interface which enables you to have certain learning aspect around that as well. So on CodeDAM, just like I said, we also have a concept of learning paths, which is solving a problem of how you approach a particular field, just like your first question was how you should approach web development. I can just quickly go ahead and share my screen to show you a quick glimpse of the front-end developer learning path, which we have, which takes sure. you through some concepts of, you know, learning about front-end web development. Let me know if my screen is visible.
Yep. All right, guys. So this is CodeDAM. There is one CodeDAM YouTube channel that he runs, and there is this website called CodeDAM.com that he has started this year. So yeah, you can continue now.
So just a quick heads up, we launched our website on Product Hunt yesterday. So you can find us on Product Hunt using this link. Just give it an upvote if you like this webinar. It would really help. So let's get back to the learning path. So if you click on Start Learning and if you go to Front-End Developer, you're going to see that this is the sort of roadmap you should take when you're starting off. Now, I agree that this is only one of the ways to approach things, but trust me, this is one of the many ways which work. And this is not one of the billion ways which would not work. So we start off with HTML and CSS. You can see we have a bunch of tutorials regarding that. Then we move
on. Can you just zoom in a little bit?
Sure thing. Yeah. So we start off with HTML, CSS, right? And we mm-hmm. just take an account for some of the things which you have to learn. If you click on any individual node, you're going to see which all things you can start off with. These are actually courses for these particular technologies. You then move on to JavaScript, then you move on to version control system, which is Git, right? So a lot of people get stuck after doing these three. What next? What should you learn next? So the next thing which I believe you should learn as a person who wants to become a front-end developer is learn about Git, because, you know, once you are getting an internship or a job, you're going to be working with a lot more people. And when you work with a lot of more people, when you code with a lot of more people, you need a sort of version control system where all of you can work on same code files. So learn about Git, it is super important. Then move on to package managers. I'm sure if you have done a little bit of web development, you have used NPM to install packages here and there.
Yeah.
But really know about them, because, you know, NPM and Yarn are much more than just doing NPM install and NPM, you know, remove of packages. So learn about them, master these things, because these are the small things which would help you stand apart from the crowd. When you're going to be interviewed for a front-end developer role, these are the things which would really shine in your knowledge, right? So if you have been asked a question, and if you can give a detailed answer about which are the most common things in NPM and use things, so these sort of things really help. Then move on to, like, you know, build tools. These are sort of like more of the things on the other side of the spectrum when you're finishing off front-end web development. Learn about Webpack, Prettier, how the NPM script works. Just go ahead and start with a framework. This is also important if you go ahead and start with React. React is, just like I said, most popular choice out there.
Yeah. So what is a framework exactly for people who don't know anything about coding?
So framework is basically, you can think of as a set of, you know, not really a set of also. It's basically a software which is developed over a particular language, in this case, JavaScript, which helps you to simplify a lot of tasks, right? So React is not strictly speaking a framework, it's a library. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Framework would be more like Angular. So Angular ships out of the box with sending HTTP requests, you know, just having styles in place. Just, you know, you can just go ahead and create components in Angular and style them using predefined set of rules. So Angular brings in a lot of functionalities bundled in itself. So that is something which we call as a framework.
All right.
So yeah, let's move on to learning different aspects like this. And these basically take you through each and everything of the technology which you need to learn.
So this is the simplest way for you to learn web development effectively. And how much of this is free, by the way?
So you're going to start with all the courses for free. Like, you know, when you're starting off, obviously, if you're absolutely new, you're going to start off with HTML and CSS. You can start with these courses even before you sign up, right? So these sort of videos are available for you. Even though if you do not want to sign up, you can start with the basics, move on to the JavaScript basics. Those are also free. You know, for the most part, you're going to be just paying for the things which are really, really, which really, really put you apart from the crowd, right? Mm-hmm. So except for that, for the most part, you can start off, you can experience the platform. And if you go ahead and unlock the roadmap right now, you get access to basically all the courses. You get access to these classrooms right here, which
yeah,
are...
Yeah, yeah. What are classrooms exactly?
So let me just go ahead and quickly show you this URL shortener classroom. So I hope all of you have heard about URL shorteners. They just basically take a long URL and shorten it up. So what you're going to do in this classroom, it's not a video course, but it's basically a hands-on practice, a hands-on learning with the help of... And actually, let me just go ahead and switch my account real quick here because this one has reached its limit. So let's use this one. So the URL shortener, what we're going to do with that is just build a live project hands-on. You're going to build a live project hands-on from the scratch, right? So you're going to write all the code. You're going to pass some exercises. You're going to have basically your own sort of a little IDE environment for you to work in.
Yeah.
Example, let's take a quick look at this exercise. We have to create a get route for short, and you can obviously read the instructions here in every exercise. So this is a great way to actually practice stuff. If you are somebody who has completed, let's say, a basic Node.js playlist or a basic Node.js course on CodeDAMP, you can just jump in into this project, start working for this particular project, and by the end of it, you're going to have an actual real project which you can go ahead and probably show on your GitHub. Like, hey, I created a URL shortener with Node.js, MongoDB, Express, and you can basically showcase it as well. So once you complete a challenge, you can move on to the next one. You can see
so
all
here you're getting to build real world projects, right? Not just consuming videos like Udemy and other Coursera places. Here you're able to apply what all you've learned and create a project that you can then show to other people that here is the project, this is what all I learned, and here's the link to it, right?
Yes, you can build real world projects here. For example, if this is the last exercise, you're going to see that you actually have a full project here, which this is the link. You can go ahead and open this in a new tab. You can start interacting with this particular link. You can even go ahead and share this to people and just get their feedback. So yeah, this was the motivation really to build a platform like this, which enables you to just have this experience of learning where you actually have to code in yourself in order to build new things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this gets you that experience which I was working on of hands-on practice, hands-on coding, which is enabled by CodeDAMP Classrooms. We also have like a typical video course, which you can use to build up the theoretical knowledge, which is first important, and then move on to the more practical side of things.
All right. What is the benefit of building projects for people who don't know anything about projects and are just thinking of just consuming video courses?
Yeah. So one of the benefits which I can think of right off my mind is that when you work with projects yourself, you get to know a lot of nuts and bolts of the thing which you're working with. So this is like super important thing because a lot of people, when they work with technology, you know, they just know it, know the technology on the surface level. But the people who are really able to debug issues, who are able to push companies and startups forward, are the people who actually know the nuts and bolts of technologies. And that is, I can assure you, that is not going to happen with just video content. It will only happen when you are actually building and failing yourself. You have to fail so many times in order to succeed, because you learn a lot more than when you are failing in coding and, you know, you're stressed out and not really stressed out, but just got irritated why your code is not working. Those are the moments when you actually learn a lot of things, because those are the times which just registers in your memory that, hey, I was doing this thing wrong and I wasted a couple of hours on that. And that is never going to happen with video courses, because the instructors in those courses are not going to make mistakes. You're going to learn from mistakes. You're going to learn from practical development. That is why projects is one of the most interesting ways to learn that, because at the end, when you are done, you also have something to show to people. It's not just a sort of a side thing which you have just done and it's of no use. So projects mm-hmm. get you that advantage of learning things as well as building something which is super presentable to the end user as well.
All right. Let's talk about the age-old dilemma of going into software development while in college or going into competitive coding, because these are two very separate fields. Okay, and someone who is coming in, they just look at the placements and they're like, I need to learn competitive coding, and they just get into this field and they're already always just doing C++ and Java, and they're on these HackerRank and other competitive coding sites. While it's also beneficial for you to pursue software development, right? What is your thinking on this topic?
Well, I would say the whole industry is wrong about this thing. Now, this is a big statement, so let me just back it up real quick. Yeah. I'm not very sure how many of your audience is active on LinkedIn, but I think yesterday there was a sort of a controversial post from an All In Calls founder where he just mentioned
Aman Goyal, right?
Yeah, he mentioned some of the people he got from I don't remember the site, but they were
Skill Academy,
exactly. So these bunch of folks were hired on the basis of their competitive skills, and then when the founder found that, you know, you are not able to do practical development from the day one, he just fired them, and it sort of created all that thing. Yeah. So just to bring it to the context, what I wanted to say is that, trust me, 99% of the times in your work, you're not going to work with what you're learning in competitive coding. Why? Because the things which you're learning are solved. And one of the most important pillars in computer science programming is you do not reinvent the wheel. This is like, people try to create projects which are, now this is fine in terms of projects, it's fine. But, you know, if you have dedicated your whole life on recreating TCP, for example, that is just not going to work, because people have been using TCP for the last 40 years, TCP as a protocol. And if you are somehow able to come up with a magical implementation, first of all, you cannot come up with that at the first go, defeating 40 years of human work. Sure. Secondly, these algorithms and things, they are fine, but they are just required in the 0.1% of cases. And when you are hired as a fresher, you are not going to be working directly on the core algorithms of a company. Do not expect that if you are hired by Google, you will be working on their search engine ranking algorithms from day one. That is not going to happen. No matter how much good you are, that work would only be done by senior developers, not by a fresher or an intern.
Yeah,
you're going to probably be working with a Chrome extension team for working on the front end or a back end of their servers. So, but again, a big but here is that you have to realize that the industry is flawed in the way that competitive coding is something which is put on pedestal right now. So companies do not really have a lot of choice. I don't know why that is the case, to be honest, in terms of selecting people on real world knowledge, but they just resort to seeing your code chef stars or, you know, how good you are as a competitive coder, how good you can solve problem as a sort of an entrance test for the company. But trust me, if you're good enough in the other part of the spectrum as well, that is, if you're good enough with real world development, with web development, ML, AI, mobile development, you do not need these companies. You do not need the FANG. This concept of being super attached to FANG companies is sort of which I do not really understand. Even if you want to go behind money, you can apply for startups which are well funded. For example, if you are a web developer, let me just give you a quick scheme of getting more salary than a Google engineer. If you're a web developer, and you want to make more money than a freshly hired engineer from, let's say, I don't know, BITS or any other reputed college, and you are really good developer, look for startups which are recently funded, $4-5 million rounds which have raised that. Approach the founders on LinkedIn, tell them how much value you can bring them to the table, tell them how much experience you have. And a fast growing startup does not need a person who can just mug up some algorithms. A fast growing startup really needs people who can put practical things from day one. So approach these people who are building real companies, who are building real fast growing startups, and you will have your way in the whole machine. So go for that. I mean, again, it's just that the industry's sort of standard is to put competitive on the pedestal and make all the hires on that. But I'm just saying that if you are somebody who wants to break the wheel, it is very much possible. It's not impossible. It is slightly hard. I won't say it is very easy. It is slightly hard, but it is possible. So if you want to make a difference, if you want to stand apart from the crowd, this is something which is definitely possible.
I hope this opened a lot of people's eyes. A lot of you guys are just entering college and you were already thinking about getting placed. And here we are just talking about something totally counterintuitive. All right. Yeah, I mean, Ajinkya is having a question and he says, books are the best way for learning any language. Courses just prepare you for a particular project. What do you think?
Again, it depends on person to person. I'm not a book guy, honestly, but I know a lot of my friends learn a lot of stuff from books. So it depends on you. Like, I cannot read a lot of books. And I have written two books. I have not really read two complete books on programming. So this depends.
And you've actually made two books on programming.
that's what I said. I wrote two books. I have not read complete two books on coding. So it depends on like what sort of person you are as an individual. If you are more comfortable with books, well and good. If not, then there is all sorts of content online.
All right. Now, one question that people were having is like, how can you balance academics and coding at the same time? Right now, we're not in college. We are just sitting in our home, and we can talk about that. And then once people go into college, what should they be keeping in mind?
So probably I would give a bad advice on this one, because I'll just share my experience, what I have done in college. So I would say just take it with a grain of salt, because I don't want to ruin your CGPA or whatever if you are aiming for higher studies. But me personally, I did not focus a lot on academics, because I always wanted to get on the programming side of things, on the business side of things as well. So for me, I was just using my time to learn coding. That's it. I used to learn about academics just a couple of weeks or maybe a week before the exam started. And this is what I did for the whole 3-4 years in my college. So I did not really balance things. I just let the seesaw just slide on the single side. So
this is
not how you should do if you want to really balance stuff. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it boils down to your priorities. Again, figure out why you want so high CGPA or GPA. A lot of people end up with 9.5 plus GPA, and they just wanted to get a job at the end. So you do not really need a 9.5 GPA and get a job, because, you know, when you are at, I sort of think like getting a GPA as a logarithmic amount of time spent. So if you want more GPA, that is when you are at 7 is sort of a, you know, ideal thing. If you have 7, it's fine.
Yeah.
Moving 7 to 8 would take you, let's say if it takes you X amount of time, moving 8 to 9 would take you 10X amount of time. And moving 9 to 10 would take you 100X amount of time. 7 would get you a job, you know, on campus as well in a lot of cases. 8 and 9 is for people who want to pursue higher studies, for example, in universities which have that requirement. So figure out why you want such a high CG. I did not really wanted any CG, high CG at all. So I just balanced my requirement. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not interested in higher studies or anything like
that. So, zero CG is given.
Not exactly zero, because most of the things you're going to see that if you have chosen the right field, which is important, if you have computer science for most of the guys in your audience, you're going to see that most of the things would be sort of, you know, relating to your programming experience as well. Not really most, but some of the things. So you can exploit that fact and just make sure that your academics are sort of balanced with your day-to-day activities as well. So figure out how much CG you want, CGPA, and just work towards that. Do not be greedy. Do not feel that your friends are getting 8, 8.5. Your goals are not same as them. Just, again, it's about like figuring out what you really want as a person. Do you want a job? Do you want to go for higher studies? Do you want to, I don't know, go for a university, which is in abroad? You want to get that internship, that thesis, and then work backwards toward that particular goal. So that should be the strategy, I think. And that is what I did personally.
That's so true. I completely agree with that. I think I'm taking it too lightly. In my case, it's like as my semesters are increasing, my CG is going down exponentially. So I might have to focus on that a little bit more.
So why do you want your CG to be, I don't know what your CG is right now, but
5.9. I have no shame in admitting my CG, because I completely wasted my time. So, I did do some things which I think might reap benefits for me. I don't know.
What do you think is a good CG for you? Like CG, I think you would be satisfied.
I think for me, for satisfaction, as an electrical engineer who wants to get into IT, it would be about 7.5, I think.
And why is that number? Like, how did you come up with
this? Because that's what our seniors are talking about. They're like, for electrical branches, if you need to sit for placements, that's what they suggest you to.
Did you do your own research on these things? Like, if you want to get an IT job as an electrical engineer on campus, how much CG cutoff is required for internships or placements? Because 7.5, to be honest, is something which I think is an overshot. You can settle on 7 as well, around just above 7 as well, because most of the companies have that cutoff on campus as well as off campus. So just figure out your things. Just like I said, your goals, if I think you have been doing a lot of work independently as well, so I'm not sure if you really want to go for placements at all. So that is also a possibility for you. So yeah, I mean, if you just sit down one day and figure out that, hey, I just want to do my work full time and I do not want to go for placements, you see the sort of burden which you get off from your back. So yeah, again, I'm just saying this is bad advice, because I'm telling you. But this is what I did. And because fortunately I had computer science, so a lot of subjects actually resonated with what I was doing. So yeah, that worked for me. But figure out your end goal and work backwards toward it.
Definitely. Someone is asking, in this world full of developers, how should you set yourself apart from the rest? In terms of your resume, in terms of just showing off that you're a better developer.
Yeah, so the world is full of developers, and if you are seeing closely, the world is full of open jobs as well. You're going to see there are so many jobs for developers, and so many developers are there. So what's the problem? The problem is that most of the developers are not equipped with the real skills. Most of the developers have just completed a Coursera course, and they have a certificate, and that's it. Most of the developers do not have practical hands-on knowledge of the things they are equipped with. So this might seem like something which is not effective, but trust me, if you have a practical knowledge of a tech stack which you can own, that means you own that particular thing, you can literally just go ahead and create anything which I say with that tech stack. Let's say Mern stack, for example, or any sort of stack which works for you.
Yeah.
If you have that knowledge, you are already ahead of 50% of the crowd. How to get ahead of the rest of 49% is that you combine circles. By combining circles, what I mean is that, all of you must have seen Venn diagrams, how they work. So in Venn diagram, you have a single circle which is intersecting with another circle. So you see, once you do follow the practical advice, you are in the 50% circle. Now, how do you get into that small, sector in which a lot less people are there? is by combining your major skill set with other skills. So if you are a front-end developer who's extremely good, learn back-end development. There are a lot of front-end developers which are extremely good. There are a lot of back-end developers which are extremely good. But how many developers are there which are both front-end and back-end and are good with
their full-stack developers?
Yeah, so that's get you that. Again, if you talk to full-stack development, the same rule applies. There are a lot of developers which are good with full-stack development, and there are a lot of developers which are good with, let's say, cloud engineering, like setting up AWS or DigitalOcean, stuff like that. But I do not know personally, even personally, I do not know a lot of people who are good with, extremely good with both. So if you are somebody who has the knowledge of full stack and deploying it on cloud, managing cost, and, you know, making use of these scalable services, you are actually 1% of the crowd. You are actually 1% of the crowd. So yeah, just start learning about things and create sort of your X plus Y plus Z powers. That is, you know this, you know that, you know that. And you can combine these three things together, because these most powerful people are the people who can actually combine their different skill sets on a single project or on a single work. So if you can do that, you can set yourself apart from most of the developers who just have, you know, React or HTML, CSS written on their resume.
All right. So more skills and more technology is the way to go.
Yeah.
All right. One more person is asking a question, and that is, should we continue to master Python as it's being taught in schools? I think that what my perspective is, in my first year of first semester and first year of college, I started learning Python, and I went deep into Python. Okay, so I was learning about PyQt5. I was learning about Tkinter. I was learning about the turtle module. I was learning about Pygame. And I was going deep into learning all of these all of these libraries. And that is something that I don't think that the schools will be doing. But yeah, Mehul, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is fundamentally wrong. So why do you want to master Python in the first go? Do you want to be a data scientist? Do you want to get into ML/AI? If that is your goal, then yes, obviously you should master Python, irrespective of it, if it is taught to schools or kindergarten students, does not really matter. Like, why are you looking at other people for getting that validation of mastering a particular thing?
Yeah.
If Python is your tool, if Python allows you to break the ice or, you know, just perform that particular thing which you want, then obviously go ahead and master it. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. Not a school student who's learning that, nothing. So yeah, definitely go ahead and master it.
Okay, one person was asking a question, I'm not able to find it, but it was pretty much around the fact that there's too much noise in wanting to learn anything that they want to. So it's like they want to learn web development. So there are actually thousands of courses on Udemy, and there are many more courses for free available on YouTube. So how should one just ignore the noise and focus on the thing that is really good and just focus on that? What's your perspective on this?
So personally, for me, I took a lot of time out of my way when I was learning these things to actually filter out the right resources. And this is exactly what I want to avoid by building the platform CodeDAM, which is what we are doing. So at CodeDAM, what we are doing is we are creating these learning paths sort of things for every industry skill. We have come up with front-end web development right now, but we are also working for back-end, full-stack, you know, DevOps, mobile application, and even language specific as well. If you want to have a mastery in Python, we are working on that, things like that. So CodeDAM learning paths is one of the way. I think I shared a quick preview of that earlier in the talk. Mm-hmm. We can also leave a link in the description if you want to start with a front end web development learning path.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, to be honest, right now what you can do for a learning path, which we do not have on platform on CodeDAM, is just go ahead and read about things, right? So I call this as a 10-click Google sort of rule, where you just
Google the first 10 links of Google whenever you're searching something.
Just Google about a particular topic and open all the 10 links in a new tab. That is, you should have 10 tabs open now, 11 tabs including Google, and read about all the blog posts which you have open, read about all the things which are available on the website, because this gives you perspective of 10 different people. And when you are actually having a perspective from 10 different sites and people, that bias which is present, or those wrong findings which is present in one particular person's blog post, gets removed. So you are left with an actual real answer of your question. So this really helps as a person when you're starting off. I do this thing even today if I'm learning something new, which is I have not really covered before.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just use the strategy, just use your own mind to actually figure out what things are working, what things are not working for you personally, and then start heading into that direction. But again, with CodeDAM, just like I said, I wanted to make this whole process much easier by actually providing updated learning paths. We have things on front-end web development. Back-end web development is coming up this week, the next week. So yeah, let's just make a good use of technology here with CodeDAM.
All right. So people can go on CodeDAM and they can start learning web development, right?
They can.
How much of that is free and how much of that is paid?
So you can start the web development, the front-end web development learning path for free. Most of the basic courses you're going to see when you start off are free. You're going to really just going to pay for the things which really sets you apart from people. So for example, just like I said, when you are, let's say, done with the basics, now you want to create, let's say, 12 projects in JavaScript. Now, mm-hmm. these are actually cool games. These are actually cool projects where you actually implement a lot of new things. So you have to pay a monthly subscription for that, which is just 499 rupees. So you can avail that discount.
Just for your students out there that are in college, they can access the complete learning paths and all the courses just for the price of one Udemy course. And here you'll be getting practical experience as well that you can show to your people that you want to hire you. Yeah.
Yeah, so one interesting thing about this compared to Udemy is that you get all the courses which are on CodeDAM platform, not just a mm-hmm. single one. And the fun fact is that I have a lot of same courses on Udemy as well, which sell real good. And I have same courses on CodeDAM as well. And a lot of people actually opt in. When they opt in for Udemy, I tell them, hey, you can get this course plus so many other courses for the same price, literally for the same price, when mm-hmm. you opt in on CodeDAM. So yeah, that's an interesting observation which I have made. But yeah, you can just go ahead and start with front-end web development learning path. As a matter of fact, because we are just launched, we are also providing mentorship where I can just give you my number on WhatsApp so that I can actually assist you with some of the things when you are starting off with the learning path. So there's that. That comes with the plan. That is the 1337 plan which we have on the website. So if you are interested in mentorship, sort of those sort of things where you just need a helping hand initially, that is the way to go.
All right. So mentorship plus practical hands-on experience plus the video courses that are everywhere. This combines what CodeDAM is providing to all of you guys that want to get started with coding.
Yeah.
All right. One question that a person is asking, that is, how much minimum time a college fresher should invest on daily basis to master software development?
There's not any hard and fast answer to this. It really depends on how committed you are to your learning and how much time you want to learn a particular thing. Because, you know, I would say just have an interaction with your code every day if possible. It is much better to spend 1 hour every day than 7 hours on Sunday, right? Because it might seem that the sum is the same, but it is not. When you are actually mm-hmm. working code every single day, you're gonna realize that you are in touch with the concepts. And one of the worst things you can do as a beginner is get out of touch and start all over again. So about minimum time, I cannot really say that, you know, just sit for 4 or 5 hours, because it depends on every person. Some people are, you know, they are extremely smart enough to just pick up concepts very easily. Some mm-hmm. people take a little bit more time in order to understand, and they need a little bit more understanding and depth of the topics which they are learning. So just start with, let's say, half an hour, 1 hour, 2 hours, see how much ground you can cover. If you think you can put in more time, and if you think this is something which is interesting to you, just put in all the time you can into coding. Because, you know, if your end goal really is to become a great coder, you're not going to become that just by spending 1 hour, because everybody on the planet is doing that. So Yeah, I mean, it depends on your goal as well. If you want to become a casual coder, like treat it casually. If you want to become a serious programmer, then put in work because you need that.
All right. What were the mistakes that you made as a developer when you were learning to code?
Mistakes I made, I would say that is I did not really went out of my way and asked for a lot of help. This is, I think this might have chipped away a lot of time for me. So ask for help. That is one thing I would say to my 13-year-old self, is because I would just go on and keep on Googling stuff, you know, spend so much time on learning from different sites, which is fine. It's not bad. But once you are done with a particular research of yours, then it's probably a better suggestion. It's probably a better thing that you can go ahead maybe on a Facebook group or maybe on a subreddit and just go ahead and ask people that, hey, am I going in the right direction? Hey, what should I do next? If you have no idea about a particular thing, get some mentors, get some people who can actually assist you with coding, join some Discord servers, whatever it is, because these things are not required, to be honest, when you're starting off, but these things would help you chip away your time. And for me, I was very small when I started off. I was 13. So I had a lot of time on my hands to waste, to be honest, right? So a 13-year-old does not have a lot to do.
Yeah.
But you guys probably are entering college. You are in, you know, appearing in your JE exam, advanced exam, whatever it is. You can really use this time. You can really save this time and make use of it in your college life or, you know, in your academy. So just try to save some time by learning from others. This is my big advice, I would say.
All right. Ajinkya again is asking how to get freelancing gigs, tried Fiverr and all doesn't help. So what are some tricks that you know for people who are not going into Fiverr or Freelancer or Upwork and want to get clients other than these platforms?
Fiverr doesn't help. What do you mean by Fiverr does not help? Can you
maybe elaborate? He's not getting clients with that, I think.
Bro, Fiverr helps. Fiverr works. It's just that it's not working for you right now because you might not be putting in work.
Optimization might not be there for the gig and all.
Yeah, that is one thing. Another thing is like, are you going ahead and applying for offers in buyer section every single day? You get 10 opportunities for that. Do you have the correct category set up? Do you have the correct gigs set up? Do you have the correct message for your buyers? Are you sending professional messages? Are you making sure that your buyers actually know that you have read the requirements? Because it definitely works. I mean, it is the easiest way you can start freelancing for small amounts. I have done it. I have taught a lot of people to do it this month itself in a lot of my webinars. We even have a freelance web development learning path on this topic. Yeah. Which is pretty much a small one. It has a condensed learning, but it has got a lot of value, just like in front-end web development. We also follow an approach of, you know, breaking down stuff into relevant bits and approaching them one by one. So Fiverr definitely works. If it is not working for you, figure out why, work on those things. And yeah, this is not an excuse. Like, because if you're not able to crack Fiverr, which is like, I believe the easiest platform out there, I think you should work more on optimizing your gigs, more on optimizing your pitch to buyers before you actually move on to other things. So, yeah.
All right. Guys, if you have any more questions, please ask. We are here for 5 more minutes. And by the way, if you want to get into freelancing, we have a complete freelance web developer learning path dedicated to that on codedam.com. The link should be in the description. So go check it out. And that way you can get started with freelancing and web development. Okay, let's see if you have any more questions. What's your review about YouTube tutorials? He himself is making a lot of YouTube tutorials.
It's a broad question. I mean, there are a lot of good YouTube tutorials out there. So yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that. So.
CSS, what should I learn next to become a front-end web developer?
Check out our learning path. It actually tells you that you have to learn JavaScript next, and after that you have to learn version control system. Check out this learning path, which we have in the description most likely for the front-end web development. And that would actually take you through what else you have to learn.
All right. Which language should a beginner learn first? It's your choice. You can go with either Python or take the web development route, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, we are back to the first question of the webinar. Yeah. Figure out your why you want to learn in the first place. And when you know that, you will know what you have to learn.
For me, it was the amazement that I get by creating just something. Like I started with Java back in 9th grade. I just studied Java for a few months, I would say, and then I got distracted by Clash of Clans, Pokemon Go, and then my IT came in, and so I wasn't able to focus again on that. But on the day my JEE Advanced got over, I went home and I took my laptop, I downloaded Python, some Udemy course from Torrent, and I started learning over there.
Okay.
All right. Sure. How do you know that you have become good enough? Okay. How do you know that you've become good enough?
This is a hard question, to be honest. You don't really know when you become
good. Do you still think that you're good enough after coding for 7 years?
I'm good enough at a lot of things. I mean, I suck at cloud computing, for example. I do not know how to operate AWS. So it's sort of relevant. It's sort of relative to what you're talking about. But good enough really means that you are able to pull off things which seems a little bit complicated to some people. So, you know, if I just showed you some of the projects which a person has made, which just visualizes all these algorithms or, you know, sorting algorithms sort of thing, which we usually see on LinkedIn, you're going to realize that they have become good enough with algorithms that they are able to perform, they are able to create those particular projects. So your good enough is gonna most likely come from people. When people actually appreciate your work, that is, if you pull off a bunch of projects which are considered good enough by people, that is by the platform, social media platforms on which you're sharing, I would say that is a good metric. That is a solid metric. The market is actually saying that, hey, this seems like a good product. That is when you know that, hey, you are a good developer.
All right. Ashutosh Biswal is asking, which one is better, Coursera or Udemy?
I think both works. I mean, both there's work, no competition. Yeah. For the most
part, web development, I feel that Udemy is better just for the range of courses that they have. But at the end of the day, all of these are pre-recorded courses and you are not able to apply your knowledge. Okay. And when that happens, you're not able to learn properly. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I completely agree with that. You just have to, you know, just stick to something which you're learning. Because if you're just keeping on switching platforms between Udemy, Coursera here and there, you're just figuring out the best way to learn. You're never going to start learning.
And the same applies for MIT courses. Like there is this one course that I really enjoyed, and that is Harvard CS50. It's available for free for all of you on YouTube. It's an amazing course. The professor is David J. Mellon, and he's just really, really excited to teach you coding, the fundamentals of computer science. So you should definitely check out Harvard CS50. But MIT courses are a lot in depth. So if you have the time and the bandwidth to go through them, I think those are also good for you. But they are really theoretical and all.
Yeah, I do not have any experience with these courses. I can't really comment on them. So, yeah.
All right. Someone is asking how to learn data structures.
Why would you want data to just structures. Learn data structures? I mean, it's so boring just
learning.
You
need to give some context with this question as well.
Yeah, I mean, you do not learn data structures. You learn to use data structures, right? Why did computer scientists develop, let's say, a binary tree or, you know, any other data structure, as a matter of fact? Because they had practical uses. So it for me, it seems like a lost opportunity if you're just learning about a particular concept without actually having why practically you need to learn that. So figure out an actual problem why you want to learn a particular data structure. For example, if you want to learn a B minus tree or a B tree implementation, figure out how databases use that. And when you want to, for example, learn that particular data structure, try to recreate that implementation of databases, how they perform a searching with the B-tree data structure, and then implement it yourself. This way you are actually not only just creating a project for yourself, number one, but you're actually learning the practical implementation of that particular thing as well. So this is like my way of going to learn new things. Just bind your theoretical concept with a practical application and create that.
All right. Last question of this live stream is to me, actually. What are the relevant fields of the future? I mean, unsaturated markets, which would help in growth. I mean, the unsaturated market that I think is really popping seems to be AR and VR. That's what Mark Zuckerberg was also talking in that interview with MKBHD. He's really hot on that. He thinks that is the way to go. I just don't find the applications of that. But, you know, again, I'm just a 19-year-old. What do I know? But other than that, I feel that you have to be good in if you're good in one thing, you will always have a place for you in the industry. What do you think, Mehul, on this question?
Yeah, I agree with your feedback on this. Just to add on a few things, if you're talking about future applications, then there is definitely a lot of potential right now in machine learning, artificial intelligence, AR, VR. This is sort of what we're going to see a lot coming up in terms of both tech as well as general use to products in the next 10 years. So if you're really planning for future in terms of technology, this is actually a solid ground. You know, there have been edtech startups working with augmented reality where they just scan your book and things come out of the book. So these are pretty cool things and they are very raw right now. The technology is just not there and it will be there in the next 5-7 years. And if you are able to think of questions like these right now, if you're able to prepare yourself with the relevant technologies and tech stack right away, you're going to be much, much ahead than most of the people when this happens. So, yeah.
Sure. I feel that because people know that these are the popping fields right now, that it just doesn't become the field that can yield you exponential results. Like take example of Google. Back when Google was starting in 1998 and 2000, no one was thinking of Google to be this next big thing. No one was thinking that building a search engine could become the next big thing, right? And so no one was focusing on this aspect of internet. And so just find these markets that no one is thinking are hyped up enough, and you can already see a machine learning to be really hyped up right now. So think carefully about that. All right, Mehul, thank you so much for joining us here and clearing the doubts of us first year and second year students. I hope all of you guys got to learn a lot from this. If you want to get started with web development, just go to codedam.com and that way you can get started for free. You can also get the complete access to all the learning paths. You can also learn freelancing on CodeDam for the price of just one Udemy course. So it's really affordable for you guys. So do check that out. But yeah, guys, thank you so much. Link in description if you want to check out the resource. Thank you so much, Mehul.
Thank you so much, Sean, for having me.
My pleasure.
Okay. Talk to you. Bye.